Summer is usually a great time for food choices for people in Wisconsin. Backyard gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores brimming with fresh produce. But for a lot of people, they don't have those choices because school is not in session. A lot of kids get their nutrition during the school year, so we need your help. St. Vincent de Paul has a food pantry that gives your neighbor in need some of the same choices you have. But to keep it going, we need your help, your donations, support the food pantry. And you can do one of a couple things. Drop off an extra bag of groceries from the store or your local farmer's market. Also, a $50 cash donation feeds a family of five for a week. You can organize a food drive, whatever it takes to keep that food pantry going this summer while the kids are at home. Let's do what we can. Here's what you do. You contact St. Vincent de Paul at svdpmadison.org. That's svdpmadison.org. Let's work on this together. Welcome to another podcast at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from the Capital Times and the Nation, John Nichols. John, what is our word for today?
I believe it is pronounced covfefe.
Covfefe.
Although there are debates about pronunciation.
Uh-huh. The president was tweeting at midnight.
And, well, that wasn't the big story, though, right? That he tweets a lot at different times. The thing was that it stayed up for like a long, into the morning, right? And then, of course, because nobody's better than Sean Spicer at, seizing defeat from the jaws of defeat. And so at his press conference, did you see this? He was sort of like suggesting maybe it was like a secret message of some kind. But he said, they asked, why did it stay up for so long? And then Spicer goes, well, I think the president and a small group of people know why, or something like that. And you sort of, okay.
Is this some, no, wait a minute. Is this a message to Ambassador Kislyak? Is this a Russian encryption?
Yeah, actually, when you type in in the translation thing, English to Russian or Russian to English, it translates it as please get me out of here. Like the signs you used to put in the back window of the station wagon when you were traveling with your parents.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Those. Well,
no, actually there is to be honest, we're joking around here, but there actually is a definition of covfefe, which is the state of being fully impeachable when that fact is not yet mentioned commonly in the media.
Whoa. I want to put things in perspective. And so this is a long clip, but it serves a point. Mika Brzezinski was mentioning it yesterday on MSNBC. So this serves a point.
It's almost impossible to lay it all out. It's been one blockbuster report after another, but we're going to give it a try here. Just look back at the past 3 weeks alone. On May 11th, the New York Times reported on President Trump's demand for loyalty from James Comey. Later that weekend, the Washington Post dropped jaws with its bombshell that the president spilled intel about ISIS to the Russians inside the Oval Office. The next day, it was the Times again, revealing Comey's internal memo on Trump's request to shut down the investigation into Michael Flynn. A day later, it was NBC's turn, with sources naming Flynn and Paul Manafort as key figures in the Russia probe. That afternoon, the Times said Flynn had informed the incoming administration early on about his secret lobbying work for Turkey, but still got the job anyway. Then the Washington Post again, quote, House Majority Leader to colleagues in 2016, quote, I think Putin pays Trump. That same day, McClatchy said Flynn had sidelined a military mission opposed by Turkey, the same authoritarian government that had paid him handsomely. And from the Wall Street Journal, a Russian state-run bank under U.S. scrutiny poured cash into a hotel deal involving Donald Trump's one-time business partner in Canada. The Journal says Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, met with the chairman of the sanctioned bank in December. Fast forward another day, it was the New York Times saying James Comey felt so uncomfortable by Trump's overtures that he literally tried to blend into the curtains to avoid him. Reuters put the number of undisclosed contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia at 18. And the Times said the president personally told the Russians that firing Comey, whom he called a nut job, had eased great pressure from the investigation. We then learned from the Post that the Russia probe had reached the White House, with the feds taking significant interest in a current senior official. And in a separate report, the Post said President Trump had leaned on the head of the NSA and the Director of National Intelligence to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion. Neither man agreed to the president's request. With Michael Flynn now pleading the fifth, the Times said Russia had been eyeing ways to influence Trump aides dating back to last summer. And the Post said a bogus document produced by Russia may have duped James Comey into injecting himself into the presidential campaign. The Department of Justice acknowledged that Attorney General Jeff Sessions failed to disclose his contacts with the Russian ambassador on a security clearance form last year in the U.S. Senate. The DOJ said Sessions omitted the info on the guidance of advisors. Then NBC News names names, saying Jared Kushner is the White House official under scrutiny. On Friday, the Post said the president's son-in-law had asked the Russians to set up a secret back channel to Moscow during the transition. Later that night, Reuters reporting that Kushner had at least three previously undisclosed contacts with the Russian ambassador.
And then there was more incoming fire. Joe Scarborough came up with some more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I was listening, I was extremely impressed. That was a really good.
She did a nice read there. I mean, considering she lost her father 2 days ago, that was a good read.
Very sad that she lost her father, but also very well done. And, I mean, that's a professional broadcaster, Sly. You should take notes, because you notice how she was actually breathing normally through the process.
She didn't sound like Donald Trump in Riyadh.
Yeah, we breathlessly did it. So really well done. And yeah, of course we could find additional elements in this. And important in it all is that when you hear that whole list, right, and you recognize something that's kind of vital here, and I hope it comes across to people, that this is not just about Russia. I mean, the Russia stuff is important, and we learn more about it constantly. It keeps, you know, expanding and all the webs of intrigue. But you also, you know, you heard those Turkey connections, and you heard about, you know, other elements and other pieces coming into this. And what you default to is that this is an administration that seems to be so lost in its own self-interest that it connects to and interacts with and engages with other countries for reasons that don't necessarily have a lot to do with the national interest. Right? Because, you know, in that whole thing slide, how often did you hear a reference to U.S. policy?
Not once.
It was good for you.
Not once.
Right?
No, not once.
Unless it was warping U.S. policy to help some foreign entity.
Well, hasn't this been the suspicion about Donald Trump from the very beginning? With the emoluments clause and the, you know.
Well, that's why I keep going back to this, because I think that there are some folks who, you know, hope or imagine or fear that there'll be, you know, some kind of smoking gun, right? That at some point you're going to have Jared Kushner facing, you know, very serious charges. And he says, yes, my father-in-law told me to do, you know, this because he owes a lot of money to these people. You know what I mean? And like this very specific thing. And then it would somehow come back to the Russians and everything would be laid on the table. Happened. But it anywhere near, if you simply have an administration that at its highest levels, or at least at, you know, rungs around its highest level, is making decisions based on who paid them, what bank they were involved with, who they were connected to on an investment deal, who bailed out their Canadian partners. You know, I mean, when you start running down that list, that's actually more chilling in the end than having it just be one, you know, bad connection. Because what you're really talking about here is the swamp, right? All I'm saying is it goes back to this core concept that, you know, there's just so much that's wrong here. There's so many ties to outside interests, to self-interest, to special interests. And this is why you have an emoluments clause, but more importantly, this is why you have ethics rules and regulations. And this administration was allowed to begin. Do you remember back that ridiculous press conference they had with the lawyer?
Oh, yes. Where
they said, oh, yeah, we're going to, everything's fine. We figured it all out.
That was stacks of paper. That was the stacks of paper. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is a total unmitigated failure, 100% failure on the part of Paul Ryan and the Congress. Because they're in existence, at least in part, to check and balance the executive branch to make sure that stuff like this doesn't just happen. It's been allowed to happen for months. It was allowed to happen in the transition. It's now continuing to be a problem. And yet, frankly, they're not, this Congress is doing nothing to hold this administration to account.
Let me, as this all gets broken up, there are some real pathetic attempts out there to make it seem normal. And one of the more tragic figures, is Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal.
And oh my goodness.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. She's a dreadful person. She was on Meet the Press the other day. Listen to this.
I think we are having a discussion that is absolutely divorced from reality this week. It is astonishing to me. Let me set the scene for you. It's 2008. We were having an election, and candidate Obama, he's not even president-elect, sends William Miller over to Iran to establish a back channel and let the Iranians know that should he win the election, they will have friendlier terms. Okay, so this is a private citizen going to foreign soil, obviously in order to evade U.S. intelligence monitoring and establishing a back channel with a sworn enemy of the United States who was actively disrupting our efforts in the military in the Middle East. So is that bad judgment? Is that a bad thing that happened? Back channels are completely normal. They happen all the time. Reagan did them. Obama did them. Mm-hmm. Everyone did. So I'm not quite sure why supposedly having, at least the president's now elected, setting up a back channel with the Russians is somehow out of bounds.
So, first of all, the story that she used there about President-elect Obama, she got off Breitbart. It's about a third-hand story that no one's been able to verify other than Breitbart. But listen to what David Frum, who is not a friend of Donald Trump's, I might add, said later in the morning.
It's even more extreme than you put it. The point to the William Miller story, if it's true, which it's probably not.
Yeah.
But if it were true, you set someone who's deniable. You can cut him off. If things don't go well, you never knew who he was. The Oman story, the United States was not talking to Iran. The United States was talking to Oman.
That's right.
And Oman talked to Iran.
That's
so
right.
It was compartmentalized. So deniability and compartmentalization.
That's right.
Are the features of a back channel. Finally, none of these people owed the Iranians hundreds of millions of dollars.
Correct.
None of them had accepted improper help from the Iranians during the election. But that's really not the point to me, as someone who's been comes from the Republican world. What was significant about that discussion was not that this defense is flimsy and preposterous, which it is. The question is, look at how Trump is changing the Republican Party.
Yeah.
This is the hill we're going to die on to defend these actions. You know, I joked on Twitter the other day that by the end of next week, we're going to be arguing about whether treason is bad.
Yeah.
And not to use such an emotive or powerful word. That's a Twitter joke. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. But just to understand, look where we are.
Yeah.
Look where we are. That this is a deep Russian penetration of the U.S. government. Today we have the news that the Chancellor of Germany has said the United States she regards as no longer a reliable country. That the supreme first Soviet and then Russian goal in Europe since 1945 has been to sever that link.
Yeah.
he's being very sincere there. He is literally beside himself.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many pieces to take apart there. Let's go back to a core concept. Presidents often establish back channels by which to communicate with foreign leaders. It has happened before. There's no doubt of that. But usually you use someone who is competent and who has, you know, connections that make sense, i.e., you empower someone to have discussions with other countries to see if they can bring something to the table. You don't send your inept, frankly ridiculous son-in-law out to tell the Russians that he wants to use their facilities to run back-channel communications. Because I don't know if you're aware of this, Sly, but there's some history of the Russians monitoring conversations. You understand the insanity of the people were saying, oh, Obama, he said somebody could talk to the Iranians. Well, maybe he did. That's not the same thing that was done here. It's not comparable. Well, and it is, in fact, you know, it's deeply troubling that people would even try to peddle such an absurd.
Well, Kimberly Strassel did her best. By the way, Charlie Sykes was really going after her in the middle of that conversation as well. Stand by. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at SlysOffice.com.
If you listen to this podcast, you clearly appreciate quality. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson is a multifaceted guitar shop offering guitar instruction, new and used guitars and amplifiers, and all accessories. We offer guitar repair of the highest quality. Instead of experiencing the total hassle of a big box store or a snarky boutique, take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson and experience what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We love guitars.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com. You know, I want to talk about the trip to NATO and Brussels, and also talk a little bit about the ridiculous notion that somehow this president said it was a smashing success. But before I do that, I just want to make mention of the story of how the administration is piece by piece by piece making sure that civil rights enforcement in this country, especially with government contracts and the Department of Labor, just slips and slides away. Those are all things that are getting buried right now because of this Russia story.
Oh, I agree with you totally. And I think this is a very, very big deal. I mean, you know, we started out, you and I, guilty as charged, talking about the whole COVID thing, you know, this Trump tweet that everybody talked about, right? Well, with all due respect, when the history of this moment is written, the likelihood, not certainty, but apparently, you know, the leaks suggest the likelihood that Donald Trump may take the United States out of the Paris Accords is probably a bigger deal.
Well, let's
start.
Go ahead.
All I'm saying is on a given day, there are so many distractions that, you know, lead people into other discussions, even people who mean very, very well, lead them into, you know, just kind of down useless corridors. Now, I'm not saying the Russia stuff is a useless corridor. I think it's actually quite important. But it is deeply problematic that there is so little attention to people doing what Steve Bannon said was the goal of this administration, which is the deconstruction of the regulatory state.
Oh, my God. I read a piece about the privatization, their attempt to privatize infrastructure. And it goes beyond the federal government. They want to do the approach of rewarding states that sell off their public assets to privatize. Yeah. Now you give Scott Walker an opportunity like that. Watch out.
Well, and you understand what this is, by the way. This is taking publicly owned pieces of property, right? I mean, maybe, or entities, a bridge, a road, a building, some structure, and saying that if some developer comes along or some contractor comes along and does some repairs to that, which, by the way, they get to deduct from their taxes. They do get to deduct their costs from their taxes. Then that person, that individual, that contractor, could get to keep it.
Yeah, that's nice.
You understand?
Yeah.
It would be like if you took your car in to get the oil changed, and they said, well, thanks for the car.
They're also talking about selling off public assets to fund other infrastructure improvements. And, you know, really what they're doing is they're rewarding their rich contributors. We knew from the moment that the Trump inaugural happened that all this money started rushing in, what the game was, right?
Oh, but this is like grifter's paradise here. What they are really talking about setting up a situation where, because of the tax breaks, because this is funded not through an outlay of taxpayer dollars, right, where you would clearly keep the ownership by the people, you know, front and center, but the way that they're doing it, using the tax breaks, you're going to strangle the federal government, i.e., you know, reduce resources for the federal government at the same time that you are bartering off our public, you know, that which we own, which is our possession. And the end result is, Sly, we're going to end up with less public infrastructure and fewer resources.
All right, let me play.
It's almost the worst of all possible worlds.
Let me play the story about Donald Trump's trip and our relationship with Germany.
I'm Kristen Welker at the White House, where it's not just Russia that's roiling the Trump administration, but some of the United States' closest allies. After the president, during his first foreign trip last week, publicly scolded NATO members for not paying their fair share.
This is not fair to the people and taxpayers of the United States.
And lashing out at Germany for what he described as unfair trade practices. Now, the backlash. A senior U.S. intelligence official tells NBC News that German intelligence says it does not need support from the U.S. in monitoring and safeguarding Germany's upcoming elections this fall. The U.S. official saying the Germans simply don't want any hint of U.S. involvement in any way. That sentiment echoed by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who recently said, we Europeans must really take our destiny into our own hands. Today, Press Secretary Sean Spicer downplayed talk of a rift.
I think the relationship that the president has had with Merkel, he would describe as fairly unbelievable. They get along very well.
But the president tweeting defiantly today, we have a massive trade deficit with Germany. Plus, they pay far less than they should on NATO and military. Very bad for U.S. This will change. Foreign policy experts warn.
I think the Russians are laughing, but they're laughing at how easy it is and how our president, unfortunately, is helping with their agenda.
All of this may be taking a toll. Today, the president's communications director, Mike Dubke, resigned after only 3 months on the job. Now Mr. Trump even eyeing the possibility of bringing in reinforcements, ousted campaign manager Corey Lewandowski and former deputy campaign manager David Bossie, both spotted at the White House Monday.
There's always some tension, and there should be tension in the White House. You don't want a White House that where everybody agrees all the time. But really, that should be happening outside of the public view, and it should be done inside the White House to help the president do his job.
David Bossie and Corey Lewandowski. Talk about bottom feeders.
Who were ditched, by the way, because they were a mess. Right? I mean, it's sort of like you have to... You got to kind of, you know, keep it all in perspective. They're in so much trouble now. They're thinking that the people they got rid of a year ago because they were such a problem are now better than what they've got. And it's a devolution, if you will, in the inner circle. And I guess at the heart of this matter, or at the heart of this whole thing is, you look at the crisis scenario that has been created for somebody like Sean Spicer. He's literally saying, yeah, I think the relationship between the president and Angela Merkel is, you know, or he doesn't say even Angela Merkel, or he doesn't say Chancellor Merkel. He says Merkel, right? You know, which is like, the hell are you? You know, I mean, Sylvester, that jerk. You know, but it's like, he says, well, it's fairly, what was this word? Unbelievable?
Unbelievable, yeah. I think that's a good word. Unbelievable, yes.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to argue with that? But the thing is, it's like he's trying to suggest there's something positive here. And it's so antithetical to reality. It's so absurd. And at a certain point, people have to start resigning. They have to quit. This notion that how Trump is going to do a shakeup, he's not doing a shakeup. The communications director was the one guy nobody ever paid any attention to. Right?
I didn't even know who he was. Right. I'd never even heard his name.
Yeah, I mean, I finished a book on this administration. I didn't mention the guy, or if I did, it was like a one-line reference. You know, I mean, this isn't a shakeup. What's really going on here is that Trump is talking about bringing more messaging people on and maybe having them inside the White House, maybe having them outside the White House. But the fundamental thing is, it's not about who Trump fires. It's about the people that stay. At this point, Reince Priebus should have quit. Sean Spicer should have quit. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that should be out the door.
Well, how about Kelly and McMaster?
No, but some of those people. Yeah, well, Kelly is an absurd yes man for the president. Whatever the president does, Kelly from Department of Homeland Security is always making an excuse. So I'm not very impressed with him. His record, his history's much better than his current service, I think. But McMaster looked ridiculous 2 weeks ago as he's trying to explain things going on in the Oval Office. But here's a good example of what I'm talking about. Elon Musk, the very wealthy developer, I guess, you know, kind of cutting edge thinker and doer as regards a lot of technology, has said that if the president ditches the Paris Accords, he, Musk, will quit and as an advisor to the administration. And that's exactly right. People should be quitting this administration, and they shouldn't give us the lie, the absolutely useless and absurd lie that, oh, I'm sticking around because you have to keep some adults in the room or you have to have some reasonable people there. There's no evidence at all that reasonable voices have had any positive impact.
All right, I got 2 minutes left here. The consequences of how Trump performed with NATO and Germany.
Well, it's unbelievably devastating. Look, the fact of the matter is that Germany, whether you like it or not, is the major economic power. Forget about all these other issues, the security issues, which are important, the climate change issues, which are incredibly vital, you know, the host of other issues that we can talk about. Germany is the major economic power that is closer to understanding and getting right the economic and social challenges that extend from a moment of globalization, digital revolution, automation revolution, how they are structuring their economy with planning and with industrial policy, and with how they relate to other countries, is a really, really big deal. And if Donald Trump is going to put us at odds with them and basically force them to look for other partners and other allies in the world, do you know what's going to happen? Other partners and other allies are going to line up and say, yes, we are delighted to fill that void. So Germany isn't going to suffer by the United States saying, oh, yeah, we're mad at you, or we're not going to work with you, or things are going to change. That's not how this equation works at this point. And so Trump is doing severe long-term damage to the economic future of the United States. And frankly, I think also to the broader future of the United States as a society, because what the Germans are doing isn't perfect. I'm very critical of some of what they do, but it is so much closer to how a country is going to have to develop in the 21st century. Trump is steering us in an incredibly wrong-headed, and I would argue, dangerous direction.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.